Welcome back to the OIS Podcast. This week, we are shifting our focus to glaucoma. Dr. Ehsan Sadri, CEO and founder of Visionary Eye, hosts an enlightening discussion with Drs. Ike Ahmed of Prism Eye Institute, Janet Searle of Mount Sinai Medical Center, and Paul Singh of the Eye Centers of Racine and Kenosha. Let's listen in and learn from this all-star team.
Hi, everybody. This is Ehsan Sadri. I'm actually delighted to have my panelists, KOL friends and partners here today with us at the OIS Glaucoma Innovation. Our first panelist, Janet Searle, as you know, she is well known in the glaucoma space and a recent professor emeritus of Mount Sinai School of Medicine. She's here. I'm delighted to get her opinion on some of the controversial topics we'll be talking about today. Paul Singh, a good friend. He is in Wisconsin, even though he's a Wisconsin fan. I invited him.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Pleasure to have you. And obviously, Ike Ahmed, who is Medical Director of Prism Eye Institute. He has no need to be introduced. Everyone knows him. Probably what I would call the Leonardo of glaucoma in our age. So absolutely delighted to have him on board. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And I'm actually delighted. You know, we were talking about it earlier before we got organized about, you know, what's going on with the market. We're, you know, heading to election year and in a few weeks, lots of uncertainty, which actually leads us to talk about glaucoma. There's a lot of uncertainty in glaucoma and a lot of controversy. I think the thing that I'd like to do is open up with Janet. And Janet, you know, you've been a teacher, instructor for many years, many fellows, residents over the years. Tell us a little bit about what excites you about, you know, your research in the last few years. And also just when you're seeing your global perspective of all these decades of teaching, what's your idea about glaucoma? Where is it headed?
I think we've defined our goals maybe a little more carefully and we understand them. We need devices and drugs that are safe, efficacious, easy to administer, easy to implant for all physicians who are treating glaucoma patients early, late stage. And I think we're getting closer between meds that we can give once a day or implant into the eye. These devices that have been shown to last anywhere from several months to maybe 3 to 5 years. So I think our goals are getting closer. I think we still need meds, we need devices, and there's been relatively new evidence, that laser surgery certainly is helpful in the early stage. So we're getting better. We have more tools to do what we do.
Excellent. Ike, tell me, I mean, you're doing some of the most cutting edge stuff I've seen and love listening to your lectures. And, you know, you and I are on some of the boards together. What's development look like? You mentioned 5 years and beyond. Let's start with that and work backwards. What's your ideal, would you say, research and development next 5 to 10 years in glaucoma in our space? And then in the next 1 to 3 years, tell me.
So, man, that's a huge question. And I think maybe we can divide up between diagnostics.
You're LeBron James of ophthalmology.
Oh, man, LeBron James. Don't talk about LeBron James here, man.
I do that on purpose. We just won another ring. I'm sorry.
Just rub that in, man. Just remember, we were the defending champs for the Raptors.
That's true.
There's a lot of things to speak about here. And I think, you know, we can maybe divide them up between, you know, diagnostic technologies and approaches and then maybe more on the interventional side of therapy. And I think, you know, when I think of things beyond 5-10 years, I'm excited about where we're going with gene therapy. I mean, we'll be able to do so much with gene therapy. We're seeing in our retina already, the ability to alter, you know, expression of proteins, change receptors. I mean, there's everything we can do with our therapeutics now we can do with gene therapy. And I think that's exciting both in terms of pressure lowering as well as from the neuro side. So that's a bit beyond, I know that as well. I'm also excited about diagnostics, the ability to pick up disease earlier. I mean, OCT angiography is kind of coming upon us here. We'll see functional imaging technologies. And I'm really excited about big data and AI. I mean, the day will come, believe me. Maybe we don't want to see this, where we have an iPhone in front of us And it'll be able to detect somebody who's at risk for glaucoma or risk for retinal or risk for cataract. I think that's where we're going. Of course, right now we're in the era of, you know, therapeutics and pressure lowering. And this is where interventional glaucoma and MIGS is really kind of upon us. And I think the devices have probably gotten a bit farther ahead than we are in terms of understanding the disease itself. And I think that's where some of the work is being done. I think we'll continue to improve, you know, our approaches. I'm particularly interested in getting back into the suprachoroidal space. You know, this has been missing in glaucoma for a few years. With the CyPass being out, we kind of had some success in there. So I'm interested in that. And I'm super excited about seeing the non-typical approaches, right? Whether it's electroceuticals, whether it's multi-pressure dials, you know, whether it's novel drug delivery, which I think is really exciting. There's so much we can discuss on that. So, I mean, you know, it's a mouthful here, but I think, you know, we have moved into this era of being proactive in terms of diagnostics, proactive in terms of therapy and interventional. That's where I think the innovation is here and going to continue.
Yeah, you touch on really a lot of great stuff. And, you know, after our segment, there'll be a panel discussion. Some of the companies you were mentioning, which basically talk about in-home, for instance, IOP or laser therapeutics and so on. And I think, Paul, when you look at the space and given a lot of lectures you give on MIGS, what are some of the things that you feel like right now that we're using in the clinic versus 10 years ago when you trained, because you're the youngest in our family.
Have a beard, that's why.
Are you doing traps? Are you doing traps or not? Tubes? Are you doing a lot more MIGS? What does that look like? Tell me.
Well, you know, I think to answer your question, I think you have to go back to what Janet and Ike just said. I think our diagnostics have allowed us to appreciate progression earlier than we ever had before. And then our new MIGS procedures, because of the high safety profiles, allow us to perform surgery much earlier, right? So they work hand in hand. So I think to answer your question, I think the more we diagnose early, whether it's right now using OCT, even things like GCC now that has become more popularized, understanding that we do lose nerve fibers and ganglion cells much earlier than we think, and this whole structure function relationship. So to me, I think the diagnostic is really where we're headed more and more at. For instance, I think just something called DARC, the diagnosis of apoptotic retinal cells, which is something exciting for me in the next few years, where you can actually diagnose cells before they even lose RNFL and GCC. They're becoming apoptotic. So I think that to Ike's point too, with the OCT angiography, that's allowing us to intervene earlier. And so for me, I do intervene much earlier, whether it's drug delivery now, we see now with Durysta approved, a lot of the different MIGS procedures, and there's no one right answer, but now understanding which patients need what device is the next step. Meaning not every MIGS device is going to work for every patient because we don't know where the resistance to outflow is, TM, Schlemm's, distal, we don't know. And so I think more diagnostic tools to allow us to appreciate, okay, how do we better tailor our MIGS procedures for the right patient? Not just based upon severity or target pressure only, but where the resistance to outflow is. And therefore, I'm actually working on with some, trying to get to work with Zeiss on a machine called the Plex Elite, looking at really architecture of the blood vessels. Episcleral vessels, limbal vessels, the iris vessels. And do we see whether it's putting someone on the Tarsadil before and after, what happens to the architecture of vessels, pre and post MIGS devices, what happens to the outflow? Can we diagnose and understand outflow facility before surgery and after surgery with minimally invasive technologies as well? So to answer your questions, I'm doing less traps and tubes, but at the end of the day, people still progress. And that is the hardest part. No matter how good these MIGS devices are, we do know in a subset of patients, these fast progressors, we still need pressures of 8 and 5 and that flat curve, right? And so traps are unfortunately still necessary, but I'm trying to minimize my need for those by intervening earlier when my target pressures are higher. So I think that's a long-ended answer to your question.
I mean, it's a tough terrain. I think what to Ike's point, if you think about, you know, so those patients that show up in our clinic, the pressure is excellent, but they're losing vision day by day. I'm excited about some of the gene therapy that, you know, it will eventually come. Janet, tell me about Light and Horizon. Has that changed the way you're sort of managing patients as far as those trials go? What are you doing? Are you starting with meds? Are you doing laser? What's your thoughts there?
So before that, just something that Paul and I brought up. So a challenge we still face is finding these patients early enough. And that's something, I don't know if industry can address, but somehow we've got to get the patients to us because I think we all believe that the earlier we intervene in the course, the more we can bend the curve. We can prevent progression. we can hopefully not see as many of those later stage patients that are on 3-4 meds, have had X number of TRAB. So I think just accessing patients is a challenge. You know, we may have these devices that we can give to the patient to take home, but we have to find the patient. And what's very interesting is, so we're trying to make devices that we can give to the patients, but yet the therapies we're trying to take out of the patient's hands, either, you know, long-term drug delivery or eye stents, et cetera. I think what the studies have told us is SLT done early on, even in moderate glaucoma patients, reduces the medication burden and certainly provides a more consistent pressure reduction over time. The challenge is often getting the patients to accept that information. You know, I live in New York where everybody gets 12 opinions. So if you tell them a laser, they think, oh my God, the earth is coming to an end. So that may be my geographic challenge. The MIG studies, including Horizon, have told us these devices do work. They lower the medication burden and they reduce the IOP. All good things. So yeah, we need to find these patients early. We need to treat them more aggressively. And I think that will, it should change the progression rate, flatten the curve.
Well, I think, you know, to Janet's point too, with the Horizon and the Light study, you know, not only did it show that they, you know, the earlier you intervene, the better the responses potentially with, let's say, SLT, but even the Horizon study showing us that at 3 years that you had less progression, less need rather for incisional glaucoma surgery compared to, let's say, the cataracts arm alone. So what does that tell us? That tells us that maybe despite pressures, you know, being fairly similar between two groups in some ways, by taking the drop burden away from our patients, maybe stabilizing IOP, do we have a better chance of halting progression? You know, there's different, obviously different studies that show fluctuating IOP may or may not be a risk factor depending on how advanced you are, right? But I think we're going to see as you go long enough along the disease course of glaucoma, that fluctuating IOP may be an issue. We just can't detect it early enough, right? So to Janet's point, I think the earlier we can intervene, the less aggressive we have to be, the better we can take compliance away from the patient's hands and issues. I think we have a better chance of halting it, not being as aggressive in the future.
Ike, let's go to you, because I really want to pick your brain. You mentioned something really interesting, and you know, we're talking about MIG space and the whole concept of drops. You feel like you made a really good comment. Do you feel like there should be emphasis on pipeline support for further enhancement of drops? You know, I know it's a little controversial. What are your thoughts there? Or do you rather just be, you know, sort of let the legacy drops continue to be in the generic form, but really focus on early intervention with the procedures?
Yeah, so it's a good question. You know, I mean, you know, should companies still be, you know, investing time and money into developing topical therapies? We just heard earlier that when we use non-topical therapies for treating pressures, that we tend to have less patients who need to go on to further aggressive surgery. And there's something about that that I think is important in terms of compliance as well as diurnal fluctuation. I mean, that being said, I mean, you know, I think we all agree topical drops are not going away. And I think that, you know, we probably would have more success if we had drops that had less side effects, less issues on the ocular surface, and perhaps had better compliance. So I think there is still potentially a role in that, although I will admit, we are into the interventional era. We had the drug medication era in the early 2000s, late 90s, and now in the mid to late, you know, 2010s, we've gone into the interventional stage, and the next 2020 and beyond will be of interest. So I would say that I think, you know, we moved away from that a little bit. I think that we're still, the search is still on for more classes. I think we're very interested and eager to see what we can do with ROCK inhibitors, and maybe there's, again, a further role for drug delivery in there. So I think the next level of drugs is really getting into the drug delivery phase of things, whether it's a better topical delivery, better tolerated, whether it's a better surface application with contact lens or other ocular surface or plugs or rings, or whether it's intracameral or intravitreal or subconj, I think there's a lot of potential there. And we're seeing already some studies that these drugs can last a year or two. And even those are showing perhaps some improvement in terms of visual field. So I think that's where I think, you know, drugs are moving into, admittedly. But I think we all know we're not going away from topical therapy right now. But I think the innovation has certainly moved away from that space. I want to add one more thing. I think one thing we've seen with MIGS is almost the way we've been able to, you know, democratize therapy, right? I mean, we're glaucoma specialists, but really, truly, glaucoma should be diagnosed and managed, I believe, amongst, you know, comprehensive ophthalmology. That's where really the action starts, and that's where it should be addressed earlier on. And I think that's one thing that we've seen with regards to, you know, these therapies is moving it into earlier, you know, stage in terms of diagnosis and treatment. So I think that's exciting. And that's, I think, where it's important industry addresses that particular group and not just a traditional glaucoma specialist that will be traditionally doing those therapies.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's this emphasis now of when we trained, it was always, you know, treat later, or, you know, IOP, there was no emphasis on progression. And I think to your point, a lot of that can also, controversial here in the US, be managed by optometrists, which you know, is a controversial topic by itself. But if you really want to check populational protection, I think you're a very good point. We could talk for hours, guys. I mean, I'd love to have you guys here, and I wanted to really wrap up and say, I'm going to give you 1 minute each. The next, you know, next technology that you're in love with, tell me, Ike, what are you, and it's hard, I know, give me top two things that you really are excited about next couple years.
Oh, it's not fair to pick only a couple. I mean, I will say this. I think we have kind of plateaued a little bit on the surgical side. I will say this, we plateaued. I mentioned earlier, though, I'm super excited about supraaccessory space, suprachoroidal space. I think that is a real big opportunity. We don't have the limitations of episcleral venous resistance and the potential to lower pressure in a non-bleb fashion, which I think is really, if we can harness that space, I'm super excited about it. So I will add that to my list because, you know, again, we're in the surgical era. Yep. There's no question, though, that when it comes to, you know, gene therapy and things, I mean, you know, we've touched this in retina, right? And the work I've done with some of the industry partners out there, I mean, gene therapy is more than neuroprotection. Gene therapy has the ability to modulate receptor, modulate protein expression. We can basically do what drugs do with gene therapy and alter things, you know, for long run. So that is super, super exciting in terms of where things are going. And then I think I'll mention again that, I mean, you know, we're also in the AI world as well, right? So I think that although we talk a lot about therapeutics, the ability, again, to take that data and provide more useful information to predict, you know, progression is exciting. And I think, like I said, with regards to whether it's IOP sensors, it's all about data, right? Why are we measuring IOP with, you know, very, very old technologies with all these wrong assumptions? I mean, IOP sensors, I think, is really what we have to be going into, understanding pressure better. That will unlock a lot of the mysteries in glaucoma as well. So I think those are sort of three big areas that I'm super excited about. But there's a lot more that are going on right now.
That's pretty good. You did a good job. All right, Janet, you're up to bat.
So I've done most of my work in the pharmacology area. So I don't know if it's coming down the pike real soon, but what I'd love to see is multiple meds in one device, because the surgeries are great, but we all know we have later stage glaucoma patients that you can do a million surgeries on, it's never going to work. So we need something, again, where we can take the control out of the patient's hand and put three meds into the eye with one little device that will last for 6 months or a year. And that's the direction I hope some companies will go. I hope.
Very good. Paul, bring it home.
Bring it home, man. I agree with both Janet and Ike. It's easy to say that, right? But yeah, I think both are common. I mean, what they said was pretty much what I was thinking. I guess I would say this. You know, the diagnostic arena, I think, is going to give us a lot more understanding of where we have to go. To Ike's point, whether it's AI, whether it's understanding even something as simple as how do we understand which patients are fast progressors by maybe this, or where the resistance to outflow is based upon the architecture of the vessels. We don't know, but if you have a number of people, a large N, you can start to understand, okay, which patients do progress based upon these identifiable risk factors on their surface or on the limbal vessels, et cetera. So I think the more diagnostic tools that we have to give us understanding, the better we can tailor our treatments, whether it's gene therapy, whether it's drug delivery platforms, whether it's novel drug delivery platforms, IOP sensing, there's so many different avenues. But the bottom line is the more we learn, the more we realize how much more we have to learn. That's the bottom line with glaucoma. So I'm hoping that with a lot of diagnostics and the tools that we have, we can treat earlier, intervene earlier, and save these people from getting blind, going blind.
Well, you guys, I can be here all night talking to you guys. I really appreciate it having you on panel. I look forward to hopefully soon you can hang out in person.
Well, I hope so soon, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
It was a lot of fun.
Everybody. So nice seeing everybody. Have a great evening. Nice.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed our glaucoma panel discussion with Drs. Ike Ahmed, Janet Searle, and Paul Singh. Don't miss an episode. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen and leave us a review. OIS's Year in Review is taking place on December 9th from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You can see more information on our site, OIS.net. We will see you next week.